Hello, chillins, and welcome to PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host, Kelly Wells. Last week, I wasn't here. I was off doing the Halloween thing with my younger daughter, Miette, and her best friend, probably, Ariana, who is very loud and very silly. But yeah, we had a good time. And I dressed up as Negan, if you were wondering, Negan from The Walking Dead. I previously had to do... to recreate him as part of an online game I was playing, and it worked so well, I was like, well, now I don't have to make another costume. I guess I'll do this. So that was pretty popular, and nobody ran. Nobody was scared. The people who answered the phone or the door of a certain age were kind of eyeing me warily as I stood in the background holding a baseball bat. But they figured with the kids there, it was probably fine. So anyway, that was my Halloween story. So, my favorite holiday, guys. So I had to talk about it a little bit. Anyway, I'm your host. I'm Kelly Wills. You can find me on Twitter and elsewhere at Spooky Milk. I have done a lot of two-man booths on this show lately, and that streak will not change this week because there's only two of us here. So let me go ahead and introduce my second, Tom Staup.
Yes, awakened from my slumber, at Tom Staup on Twitter. I do the NXT tapings reports, and I am a total Walking Dead comic snob. I'm one of those people that hates the show because it's not like the comics, so I'm tempted be a jackass and ask which version of Negan you based your costume on, but I will confess that his character is actually one of the things that they've translated over pretty well, so... Yeah, I'll have to creep over to your Facebook to see the pictures and see how well you did.
Yeah, it's I actually didn't put up many this year because I put up some last year. Last year I was really, really sick on Halloween. That's when I made the thing for the challenge. I was super sick, so I basically got into it so I could just take a picture or two. Like, that was it. You can see how much in hell I am during those pictures. And so I did it this year because I never was out. Nobody saw it unless they saw me on Facebook. Nobody saw me in person except for my two daughters and my wife. But yeah, not a comic snob because comics are not a sacred cow. Even comics have internal problems. So not something to care about. I dislike the show because it's written poorly most of the time.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with whether it's the same or not. It's just it certainly had its highs and it roped me in longer than it should have. But oh my gosh, the lows are just embarrassing. Anyway, let's talk about another thing that has embarrassing lows, professional wrestling. We had a little show, NXT, this week. Lots going on. We're actually going to start with the news that Nikki Cross was called up, or she was at least in one performance on SmackDown Live. I didn't know that. This was brought to my attention because I don't really watch the main roster very much. But I try to keep up on it just in case anything involving NXT happens. So Nikki got she got brought up. Tom, did you see it? And if you saw it, tell me a little more about it. I know what happened, but anything you can cover about that. And there will be questions about it. But first, give me the brief download. What happened?
Yeah, I admittedly, coming from a similar position as you, I actually took myself out of the house to go see mid-90s last night because I wanted to get my mind, well, not only because it looked really good, and it was okay. I'll go into the detail on my Twitter if you'd like to talk to me later. But I just had to take my mind off of Rick Scott winning another election here in Florida and came back to the YouTube highlights. So yeah, Becky was out there cutting an absolute fire promo as she does on Ronda Rousey, and she issued an open challenge because she felt like a fight. The three members of Sanity came out, and while the announcers were very confused, Nikki Cross then burst out of their entrance dry ice steam that was going on, and she repeatedly told Becky that she wanted to play. And they had a little match. I only watched the highlights that were on YouTube. But, you know, since she's up against the champ, she did lose, but Nikki Cross is also kind of one of those characters that can lose and then bounce right back up and laugh about it. And,
losing's what she does, man. I mean, I had a couple people. I talk wrestling at work a lot with a guy named Romeo, and Romeo knows Wade pretty well as well, because Wade drops into where we work. So we've all talked at times. So he talks wrestling with Wade as well. Wade as well. Anyway, Romeo was complaining. He was like, "What'd you think? Your girl got called up and she lost." And I was like, "Oh yeah, I mean that's kind of a thing. She doesn't win a lot of matches, and she doesn't necessarily have to. She's one of the only baby faces. Like heels have that because they create their heat in whatever way they do. With baby faces, that's a little tougher to take a losses and take a lot of losses and still be Teflon. You've really got to have some kind of out there character, and she's one of the ones who can make it work. Otherwise, if you're a babyface and you're fighting for what's right and everything like that, and you're losing all the time, fans give up on you kind of quick. So it's interesting what she's able to do.
And a key point here is that this is part of the WWE's biannual, I think, UK tour. They were either in Manchester or Liverpool, I think Manchester. And, but since Nikki is Scottish, there's a question that I certainly have whether this was just a one-off appearance similar to Pete Dunne's last year when I think that was just last year when they put Pete Dunne up against Enzo. And there's always a question mark with Nikki Cross.
And with Sanity. Like, who knows?
Oh, my gosh, right?
When I realized that this was a UK show, I was brought back to remember Nathan Jones and the 5 minutes he spent in WWE. Were you paying attention to that at the time?
Yes. The guy who was supposed to tag with Undertaker?
Yeah, and he had all these really dark promos and things like that. And a lot of folks were really excited about it until word kind of got out. Yeah, this guy in a ring is just – there's nothing there. So, like, I was one of the ones – I had decided for a while not to pay a lot of attention to online. At the time, the online wrestling places I was going were literally making me a worse person. They were making me angry all the time. So I just ignored them for a while. And so with Nathan Jones, I thought, this is going to be awesome. And I saw his first match, and it was brutal. And then I had to look up, and everybody had been talking about for a while, like, yeah, you don't get too excited. Anyway, I was brought back to him because what he did was he wanted out of WWE. He just didn't feel like he fit in there, whatever. And he basically hung on until they went on a tour of Australia. And then when he went there, he basically deserted the company. So he just took he used the company for a free flight home. Like, that's what he did.
Rode out to the outback.
Yeah, he got flown back, and he was just like, "Yeah, I'm not going back with you guys. Like, this is it for me."
Wow.
So hopefully that's not what Nikki's doing. I don't know what made me think of that.
Yeah, and I don't know how much gets spread around the PC or the inner circles or whatever, but I will at least say that there were people. Like Jessica Carr comes to mind that I saw tweeting last night about how proud they are of Nikki. So if they know something and they aren't just assuming the same way we are, maybe this is a legitimate call up.
Right.
So.
And she'll do her job or whatever. She'll work her match with Candice, and who knows who will win that, because Candice doesn't win a lot of matches either. But
right. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll let's get to a couple of emails about old Nikki. And other things. This is from JB, one of our guys from Detroit. Being that the men's War Games match has taken away any possibility the tag titles are NA title being defended, that leaves a little room on the card for other matches. I think this might be a perfect time to get two women's matches on a takeover, and the feuds are already set up to do so. Number one, some form of a rematch between Sane and Baszler, whether it be one-on-one or involve Duke, Shafir, and whomever to team with Sane. Number two, Bianca Belair versus Nikki Cross or Nikki Cross versus Candice LeRae. With Evolution just happening a few weeks ago, I think this is the perfect time to showcase NXT as the incubator for the women's revolution. Then he emailed us later and said, I need to make an addendum to my previous email. With the debut of Nikki Cross on SmackDown Live tonight, we can rule her out versus Bianca or Candice at War Games, correct? There is the possibility that they give her one more passing of the torch moment, but I would see that more against Bianca than Candice because the Candice angle would seem to need more storytelling. I'm inclined to agree, although this Nikki and Candice thing seems like it is getting fast-tracked. That's not one of the ones that they said for next week, right? Because next week we've got Mia and Bianca, and we've got the War Games Advantage match. So
right, and they did not announce the competitors of that for some reason.
Yeah, that's fine. That's the only surprise, really. We know the heel's going to win that match. I just don't know who's going to be in it.
Right.
So it's as far as the Nikki thing, yeah, I think this probably precludes her from being in TakeOver. I especially don't think that they throw her in a second women's TakeOver match because that's just not something they've done in a while. It did happen, actually, way back when TakeOvers were more showcases for almost the entire NXT roster, and they would have a number of short matches. There were some really short matches in TakeOver early on, and they would have more matches. But that's just not what's done anymore. And that's a better, but that's not what's done anymore. So if there was another one, I would expect it to involve Bianca, and I don't think it much matters who is on the other side of that ring. But I could also see Bianca being inserted to the match just because we've had so many, but no, with it being 2 out of 3 falls, never mind. That does not make sense at all. So, yes, in short, too late. I don't know, Tom, what do you think about Nikki's prospects of what her send-off's going to be here in this whole thing with Candice?
I actually think that there's plenty of time to do maybe one more backstage segment, or shoot, maybe they don't even need to do anything else, just a match announcement, and throw it on the pre-show. That wouldn't be my suggestion, but just with the typical 5-match layout of TakeOver, we've already pretty much got our 5 matches, so I don't think that they're going to replace Ohno Riddle with a match that doesn't have as much behind it. Although I would agree that before this full card came together, I was thinking that this would be a great place to put 2 women's matches again, finally. So I could see something with Nikki on the pre-show. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if she stuck around for one more taping, if this is indeed a full-on call-up, which is not uncommon. Sometimes with somebody like, trying to think of an example. I want to say Sonya Deville? No. Well, so Sonya Deville and Ruby Riott had a little mini feud going on, and after their call-ups, they did one more taping to blow that off. There's somebody else I'm trying to think of who challenged Ember Moon as like a, hey, I'm going up to Raw or SmackDown. Yeah, actually, it may have been Sonya Deville after she beat Ruby Riott at that same
table. I do think
taping.
That was her. Other than that, I don't know who else it would be unless Peyton did it again. I don't know.
Yeah, so that's where they get that send-off. And for somebody like Nikki, who's as popular with the crowd as she is, I think that that would be welcome, and she'll probably continue to do the live event circuit as sort of a little farewell before she's full on main roster full time.
And she'll feel like a surprise on the house show circuit as well. So she'll get some big pops because people won't expect her to be there anymore. Unless she's already booked. Who knows?
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Harley also emailed us. Our boy, Harley R. Paget, made his big return last week, and he's gone this week, but he'll be back soon. Assuming this is a call-up for Cross and not just a one-off appearance, she spent 812 days between her NXT TV debut, August 17, 2016, and her main roster debut. From the class of 2018, Murphy, Moon, Jose, AOP, Iconics, Almost, Vega, Sanity, the average length of their NXT stays is 815 days, so she is almost precisely average. Cross went 9 days longer than Neville and 93 less than Victor. I suspect we haven't seen her final NXT appearance yet, though, so I'll hold off on her win-loss records until that time. I'm excited to see that. I could ruin that for myself, but I'm more excited to hear it in real time because she didn't win very much. She won like 3 matches on TV this year. I don't know if it's that many. It might be 2, but she didn't win many. So thank you, Harley, for coming up big even when you're not here. But yeah, that was the Nikki Cross thing. So we opened this week with Heavy Machinery versus Forgotten Sons. Not the way in general to grab me, but I dare say by the end of the match, I was kind of into it. It was pretty reasonably. It was best case scenario, given what I suspected and as far as how invested I thought I'd be in the match. This really kind of came together. And some of these matches with acts that have not really seen their potential. I don't know. There are times that every now and then watching the match in real time feels like work, where otherwise I would be like, I can kind of tune out to this match and it won't be a problem. This match wasn't like that. And I was surprised. So, Tom, did you feel the same way? And you're not as negative in general as I am, but this match, I don't know. I thought this was a pretty good outing for these guys.
Yeah, I am right there with you. I think I'm right, like 50-50 on Heavy Machinery. So they come out and I'm not excited. I'm not disappointed. I'm just like, all right, who's their opponent going to be, though? And I remember when Forgotten Sons came out and I just sat right back down and thought maybe I'll go through my report so far, make sure I've crossed all my T's, dotted my I's, make sure I spelt Perrazzo correctly or whatever it may be. But yeah, I 100% agree that by the end, I'm not saying that either of these teams are my new favorites or anything, but it was serviceable. And the finishing sequence in particular absolutely had my attention. And the finish, while my knee-jerk reaction was like, oh, I think we just saw the Forgotten Sons reach their ceiling, I, after thinking about it a little bit, I feel like maybe we're going to go into a prolonged, maybe 2 or 3 month long feud that just takes place entirely on NXT TV that really echoes what we saw with the Mighty and Street Profits. Where they'll just go back and forth for a while until whichever team they want to push more is the definitive winner.
Right. And these teams are both in a spot. I thought the same thing when I saw this booking. I thought neither one of these can really. Heavy Machinery can stand to lose. I don't know if they can stand to lose to the Forgotten Sons. And I didn't know if the Forgotten Sons could stand to lose to anybody on TV yet, just because right. of how tepid things are. But I kind of thought the same thing, where if you've got this as one of those feuds where it goes 3 or 4 matches and they trade a couple of wins, we'll take Kairi Sane and Lacey Evans, who I am in both cases excited to see at this point. But the point is, they had a feud, like a 3-match feud, where they traded the first two and they had their blow off, and it really helped both of them. Like, neither one of them was super hot at the time. Sane was somebody they cared about, but was not. She was pretty cooled off, and Lacey was somebody that you didn't think of as somebody who would win any matches, and they had a mini feud that really helped them both. And this, maybe that's something that could help these guys. Maybe they have one or two more matches. I don't know how you justify another match, although the heels can justify it any way they please. So maybe you have them do that. I was kind of disappointed they didn't have them do it later in the episode, but we'll see, because maybe this is just them trying to figure out how they're going to tweak this, but they got TV time and they made good use of it. So decent match. And there are emails a little bit later that have more to do with other things, but we weren't the only ones that were pleasantly surprised. So I'll say that. If you want to email us, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. So I do have a few more emails here, just a few. And if you want to get a hold of us, ask us something, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. I am going to read the last email we got. It's from Paul Diem. Hi, guys. As always, you're my favorite show of the week. A couple of thoughts from this week's show. Number one, dictionary fact. What is the definition of an uninteresting? It's Heavy Machinery versus Forgotten Sons. I was actually pleased my internet was having intermittent streaming issues during the match. Both teams are just such non-factors. Number two, Jessamyn Duke had some of the worst acting I've seen on pro wrestling TV in that backstage segment. Oh, my God, Paul. I have been waiting to get to this, but it was tough. It was really tough to watch as someone who went to school for that, to watch somebody like she's cheating out, like standing forward. And then when two of them had to switch places, she made sure not to turn. Like she just kind of strangely, between what she said and how she moved, she is, I don't know. I had thought for quite a while, just because it felt right, that they were going to do this horsewomen thing at Survivor Series. But watching that, I go, there's just no way, unless that's who you quickly, unless she's the designated gets pinned by a clothesline early person. That's a work in progress if she's going to stick around. Number three, the Candace backstage segment was more intriguing than the Gargano selfie thing. Far more believable as well. I'm really into what they are doing, both with her character and her look right now. Number four, I don't think I could find the character of Lars Sullivan less interesting, but then they added the poorly written Lars on the back of his trunks. Add to that the fact that they allowed him to get that much offense in on Dream and get a victory, albeit by interference. It's ridiculous. I get it. The guy is tall, big, muscular, but he is thoroughly uninspiring and boring. Please, NXT, keep him off my TV. Take him and Screaming Nikki and give them their own unbelievable reality show. I'm mostly on board with that, although when Lars is the size that he is, he has to get that much offense. And the fact that he won, the bad news is I do suspect that was a way to maybe get him into the title match at there's not a lot of time, but it felt like a way to get him into the title match at TakeOver. And of course, Tom knows whether that's happened already or not, but that's how it felt to me. The Candace being more, I don't know if it was more intriguing than the Gargano selfie, but it did come off as a little more, I don't know. What Gargano said was 100% believable to me until I'm starting to like the dark. That was very catchphrasey. But in general, I really liked, we'll get to the Gargano thing, but anyway, in fact, we'll get to all that, but hopefully you go back and watch Heavy Machinery versus Forgotten Sons. I'm not going to tell you what to do with your time, but we'll get to Lars, of course, as well. But thank you for the email. I just wanted to cover that just because I thought it was funny that the Heavy Machinery versus Forgotten Sons thing came up. And I think it really exceeded expectations. So if you've slept on these guys and didn't pay attention because of the reasons I would have, maybe give it a shot. Okay, so let's go to Dakota Kai versus Tainara Conti. I will say, against Tainara, the hair flip is too obvious when you're walking out to the ring. The heel doing the hair flip is too obvious. There are other ways to do it. But this match, Tom, what did you think?
I honestly kind of loved this match. It was a favorable matchup just for an exhibition because I'm a sucker for seeing anybody from the first Mae Young Classic pitted against one another. That's just bait for me. So I was already on board, even if it didn't turn out to be super great. And I thought that I went into the match already liking both competitors and came out liking them each more. I think Tainara has a really good, she's working on a really good character heel role, which could easily be flipped babyface. I really like when wrestlers work their characteristics into what they do in the ring. And I think she's doing an excellent job of that. And Dakota, I don't know if they're giving her – I was shocked that she went over here. I really was. I thought for sure that she was going to take the fall because they just over the past year or so, they've seemed to favor Tainara more, and Dakota's just been a fall girl. But either they're building Dakota up to be sort of another – I don't know, let somebody else through her gate that she keeps or perhaps they're sort of doing what they did with like a Sasha or a Bayley where they're not completely dominant. But they stay believable enough that when they want to get them hot, they can. And the thing with Dakota though, is just in the live crowd and, you know, on camera, you can see some people standing up and cheering for her and whatnot. But every single time she comes out in that in at Full Sail, I'll stand up and start clapping for her. And I'm pretty generous with my standing ovations, but I do like Dakota quite a bit. And every time I can hear people around me like, really? Her? Ugh, sit down. Why? Why her? And I don't know what that is. And I don't know what Dakota needs to do without turning heel to try to turn people around. I know she's doing the NXT UK thing as well. I'm not sure if she's going to segue over there entirely or not. But it's just, it's odd. There is something that's not connecting right now.
Well, and her booking is not helping. She could have been super hot if they had gone with her versus Shayna instead of the, to me, completely tired and uninteresting Nikki option. When you knew Nikki's just not in any position to win that title and was just never going to win that title.
Yeah, I think that really defined Dakota quite a bit in a lot of people's eyes.
She was right there, and then she literally just existed to – she did so much of the work in pushing for that match and then was not in the match. If you're listening for the first time in a while, let me remind you, I'm a massive Dakota Kai fan, a huge fan. So I didn't expect her to go over either, which was going to bug me because I'm not that high on Tainara. Although in a year, she has been one of the ones who really has shown marked improvement from one May to the next.
Absolutely.
Yes, in wrestling terms, but definitely in terms of creating an in-ring character, which the first time around wasn't there. And when she got put into Undisputed Era, I thought, whoa, this is a little much for this worker. They could probably do it now and it wouldn't seem so out of place. But at the time, I just thought she's going to be eaten alive as by far the least charismatic member of that group. But now she's showing something. So I thought she was going to win until the announcers started talking about Dakota's breakthrough feud with Shayna and how it changed her. And I thought, oh my gosh, she's going to win this match. As soon as I heard them talking about that, I realized there had to be a reason. And I thought that would be a weird thing to bring up if she was going to lose. I do like her finisher. I like her overall, but yeah, we'll see where this is headed because this definitely could be a thing where she's just a fall girl and she's got to win a couple of matches before it's time for her to fall again. But it also could just be for crossover purposes because they did make mention a couple of times of how she's part of NXT UK, which I am now 2 weeks behind on, but I'll get there. I will get there probably tonight later. But yeah, Dakota and Tainara. Don't do the hair flip, though. That's too obvious. Find something else. Find something else.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at pwboom.com. Once again, that's pwboom.com.
So Mia Yim and Bianca Belair backstage bit. Bianca, as is her wont, interrupted somebody else, which I love. I'm a sucker for that. Mia, I thought, did okay. So she was, I think, fine on the mic and acquitted herself well. And especially when you are in a sparring match, a war of words with Bianca, that's not necessarily, that's a scary place to put somebody who hasn't been around a long time in the company and maybe is just getting their feet wet in the company. But I thought she did all right, and I'm looking forward to this as a result. I'm surprised that this match is happening so early. And I also wrote down the head baddie in charge, because it's so clear that this is supposed to be head bitch in charge to me. But yeah, the head baddie in charge. I don't know. I think I'm kind of looking forward to this. What'd you think?
Yeah, I the HBIC, I had the same reaction that Bianca did, but she is the Blasian baddie. So although I had the same thought, I had to remind myself that that's her nickname, the Blasian baddie. So it works.
Yeah, and they
works.
Say what they say. They're not going to have her catchphrase. They might have her say the word bitch, but they won't have her catchphrase it.
For sure. And with Mia, I mean, it goes without saying that Bianca just absolutely dominated this segment. She was fantastic. Just every single thing that she did was spot on. She's really perfected what it is that she does. With Mia, I will be very forgiving because it's still novel to see her on NXT. I'm still not over being giddy that she got signed and that she's made it to TV so quickly. I started to like her. I think I've seen her work face more than heel, although I think she's known more for her heel work. But I started to like her based solely on her ring work and honestly just getting to know her behind the scenes personality, I think, with her activism and whatnot. But as far as being a character, I can't think of any babyface promos I've seen her cut before this, if this even counts, since she got interrupted so quickly. And it was a little cringy. It reminded me a little bit of actually a friend of hers who just seems a little wooden, seems like they might rather be a bad guy, and they're just sort of standing there looking a little bit like an action figure and saying their lines. Somebody pulls the string on their back. So I think she's good at being a both a face and a heel, but the only times I've ever really heard her talk before was as a heel. So I wonder if there's how much room for improvement there is for her here. There definitely seems to be some. So, yeah, it was fine, but it really, really revolved around Bianca. So, yeah, it was good, though.
Yep. And a tough draw. She won't be standing across from Bianca all the time. Like, she won't be having to battle a war of words with Bianca every time. That's a tough place to be. That's a tough draw. So, Keith Lee, Matt Riddle, both got a tiny bit of TV time. Backstage with Ono, saying shiny new toy, and I want to break the shiny. I don't remember what he said, but man, it was a bit silly. As was the segment, which is fine. I think if they're going to do this with Lee and Riddle, that's okay. At least for a one-off backstage where they do each other's catchphrases, that almost, to me, that calls the right kind of silly attention to it. Like, they're making a little fun of it. so it didn't bug me that much. It was, for me, this segment was utterly harmless, and it's working towards an obvious gatekeeper match for probably Riddle against Ono at War Games. Anything to add on this one?
Yeah, you know, I hope that, oh man, we've beaten this horse so much. It's the darn catchphrasing. It's like that. I was joking on Twitter the other night that I just need to come up with a catchphrase for me to have conversations with people, because then all I have to do is say my catchphrase in different tones of voice, because that's what WWE characters do. And you've already got Matt Riddle, who I think has more credibility than that. And sure, he's got his catchphrase, but he's already just sitting here spouting them, and that wasn't good enough. He had to say Keith Lee's too. And I don't know. It was just the one. It was just the one segment. It's not going to put me off too much. I think it made. I'll hear people say things like, "Oh man, we haven't seen this person on TV in forever. They've been completely forgotten about." And it's like, well, they work once per taping, sometimes twice. You're not going to see them every week. Wrestling conditions us to have a short memory. Don't give up on them yet. But Keith Lee does seem like he's kind of fallen off a bit since his debut, and putting him here, I don't think it's going to become a triple threat or a handicap match or anything ridiculous like that. I'm definitely banking on Ono Riddle, but him being there, being one of the shiny new toys, makes me wonder if how he is going to factor in, if at all, and if Ono will continue on past Riddle to then face Lee. I don't know.
Or if Riddle will face Lee, like maybe this is just a short establishing of these guys being friends, and one of them will turn. And if they feel like Lee isn't as hot as they'd like, and if he's coming off a little heelish, because much of what he says does come off heelish, and he's got the right babyface type charisma, but the things he says are all heelish, so maybe they're gonna do that for a while. I don't know.
Sounds like the best way to go from here. I wasn't thinking of that, but I like that idea.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all. And whether that's organic or an audible, I don't know. But I wouldn't be surprised at all. So we got a War Games hype video next. Lots of cool stuff in there, I thought. Pretty well produced, as you'd expect. But we've got... what's official? We got War Games, Sane Shayna, 2 out of 3, Dream Champa, and Black Gargano.
So, right.
Yeah, that's official, and it will shock nobody when Ono Riddle gets added. That still feels almost pre-show to me, just with Ono being in it. But yeah, they've done enough, I guess. I also didn't write down the bit about, oh no, I wrote it down. I just, we blasted through it. Shayna and the Horsewomen.
Jessamine.
Yeah, work to be done. Otherwise, I like Shayna doing the classic heel thing of when the match is made, complaining about, like, talking really big until the match is made and then complaining. Shayna's so good at the parts of the job that you don't expect legitimate fighters to be good at coming in, because she's never had to be afraid of anybody probably in her life. Certainly not before she did the whole fighting thing for a living, but she's not somebody who probably ever had to play the coward, and she's doing that in a way that does not undercut her badass persona. I just really like the way she's able to walk that line. It's good stuff. So Shayna doing that and the War Games hype video in general, anything on either of those?
Nothing really on the War Games hype video. I guess I'm surprised that they went so deep into Undisputed Era's history, but it's fine to get a refresher every once in a while. Not everybody watches all the time. Maybe there are some new viewers. For the Horsewomen backstage segment, Shafir kind of fades into the background. I feel like she does pretty much every time I see her. So she's the one that I would hone in on as far as really needing the most improvement, just based on what I've seen, because I have a hard time defining her. If you ask me to describe her, I think I would just say brunette and Shayna's friend. I thought that she and Roddy were already married, but I think they just got, I think they actually tied the knot yesterday.
Oh, really? So they've been together, but they just,
Okay. Which, of course, I mean, hey, I'm not married to the mother of my children either, and we're happily together, so there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not judging there. I was looking for some extra detail to throw in there. There were some fun Instagram stories from the wedding, and if I was reading everybody's outfits correctly, I'm pretty sure those were the ones with the nuptials. Jessamyn, she is so super laid back on her YouTube channel, 8-Bit Amazon, and I've run into her twice outside the tapings, and she's so super laid back there. She's a pretty intimidating person, maybe not on Shayna intimidating level, but I feel comfortable sort of being like, hey, Duke, what's up? You got a match tonight or whatever? And she, you know, she seems like the kind of person that, you know, water is just going to slide right off of her back no matter what. And it's not translating to the camera. And honestly, that goes all the way back to what I believe was her first on-camera appearance for WWE, ringside for Shayna at the first Mae Young Classic, next to Shafir and Rousey. And her cheering for Shayna just felt so forced and fake. Like, I'm sure she was actually feeling those emotions, but it felt like an actor that doesn't know what to do and is just doing the most exaggerated.
Right. Somebody who doesn't know acting is
sometimes she's got it in her, and hopefully she's able to translate that laid back attitude. Honestly, not that it has to be redundant of Shayna, but it's the same kind of thing Shayna does. Shayna just walks around like everything's going to roll off her back. It doesn't matter. She doesn't have to be afraid, like you said. And Jessamyn's got that in her too. So she's just got to find a way to keep that on when the camera light turns red.
Yeah, when you go into acting in college, there is a steep divide between people who know how it's done, who know how to play reality, or at least understand that you're supposed to play reality, and the people who think, okay, now I go into acting mode. This is how I act when I'm acting, and don't understand that that you're trying to kind of do a reasonable facsimile of what you would do in real life. It's interesting to hear you say all that about her, because obviously none of that translates. Like, I don't get anything but like wooden kind of awkward, just somebody who doesn't know the business. And I think when you're trying to get over I don't know if you call it a stable yet, but at least an existing group on TV, why not just let her be herself? Like, why not let her half-ass the clapping and just sort of, you know, be kind of interested? I just feel like that would be a fun dichotomy between, like, Shafir actually just kind of being a little more excited. I don't want all of the people in a stable to just be as one, because then why are they a stable? I love stables with, you know, different personalities within the stable. So, and New Japan's great at that. So watching, and that's one of my favorite things about New Japan, is that you almost have faces and heels within the stable, even though they all work together all the time. And because I'm watching so much of that lately, I'm going to compare everything to that. And I just wonder why you feel like you need to have, when everything's so gray anyway, and the announcers don't seem to care when a heel cheats to win, then why are you trying to make everybody in a stable the same? I don't know. And I don't know if that's her failing or a failing of what they're doing, or more likely it's just them not really caring yet. So they just say, we're just throwing them out there for 30 seconds. Who cares? I mean, it's about Shayna anyway. But yeah, these are the little things that where you can get better.
For sure. And as for the match announcement itself, that was a bit of a jaw drop moment for me. It was a jaw drop moment for me. I should have expected that something would have been thrown in to juice up what is probably going to be their last match together in NXT. But yeah, this really it went from like, okay, awesome, I like seeing these wrestlers go up against one another, I'm really looking forward to this match, to I will be now shocked if this is not my favorite match on the card.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
On TakeOver, historically, women's title matches have been surprisingly short on the whole, which is odd considering how good their division has been oftentimes. And it's always taken a big back seat to, well, the main championship, but also, the tag team championships have always been given more time, and they've been good. Like they've always delivered, but we haven't seen the minutes out of the women. But as soon as they said it was going to be 2 out of 3, I said, this better get the minutes. Like, this cannot be another 9.5 minute special. That's just not going to fly with the 2 out of 3 falls match with a pairing that has been feuding for the better part of a year. So I'm pretty excited about it, and very interested to see what they tell, with Kairi obviously going to be wrestling from below, probably have some worked injury early on in the match that'll cost her the first fall, and she will have to overcome for the second. And then the big question is, does she have anything left? I mean, that's what's going to happen. That'll be the match, but it's going to be, I think, extremely fun to watch these two tell that story. And I, like you, I was taken aback, and I thought, well, 2 out of 3, that's nothing crazy. And the more I thought about the stories they tell with a super dominant and a super plucky pairing in a 2 out of 3 falls setting, I'm pretty excited about it. So that's going to be good stuff. All right. An email from Brian Alston, who just emailed a bit ago, and it popped in. Hello, friends. What a fantastic episode of NXT. From beginning to end, there were no bad segments. I especially liked the women's segments. Candice LeRae had a nice and short interview. Dakota Kai beat Tanara Conti. Good TV match. Kathy Kelly interviewing Shayna Baszler, Jasmine Duke, and Marina Shafir. Marina swinging her leg in front of Kathy's face. Jasmine standing and getting in William Regal's face. Excellent. Mia Yim also getting interviewed by Kathy Kelly, troublemaker, when Bianca Belair interrupts with a shoulder bump and talks tough while smacking her gum. Classic. Have a great night. I know I'm going to sleep well tonight. I loved the smacking of the gum from Bianca as well, especially like since it was just a way for her to belabor the word undefeated, which I just eat it up every time. I loved it as much as you did, Brian. Good stuff. I am going to read one more email before we move on to the next thing. Paul Leonard. Hey, guys. So tonight the official, hey, we haven't seen these people wrestle in a while, so let's give them matches edition of NXT? Seemed that way with the first two. So I have to go with what I think is the biggest part of the show, Gargano's explanation. I have to say it gave me chills when he started explaining. I love it when a heel feels they are in the right. Johnny came out as trying to be that way, though I think he may have been trying to channel a little bit of Becky Lynch there, though. Still a great segment, however, and, well, I am reminded of the saying from Batman, you either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. Last semi-NXT and podcast thought. What did you guys think of Nikki showing up on SmackDown? Oh, yeah, we already kind of covered that. Also, I enjoyed having Kat on the show last week, so consider this a vote to have her on more if you need more people for a show. All right. He got us teed up with our next bit with Gargano. I wrote down two lines here for Gargano. I'm the hero at the end of this story, and I still fight for what's right, but sometimes I realize you have to fight a little dirty. That one feels scripted, but all the same, I love the sentiment from someone who is essentially a heel. I love the fact that Johnny is a heel who still believes he's a face. This is territory that is 101 stuff in movies and in film and screenwriting and things like that, but is not necessarily a big thing in pro wrestling. It's a little nuanced for pro wrestling at times, but you've got to do some nuance with Johnny because he's been through a lot of things in this storyline. So Johnny, never going to be a great shakes on the mic. He's okay. He comes off a little stagey. He comes off a little rehearsed, and you can tell that things have to be written out pretty well for him. But all the same, I liked the words that were said instead of until some of the catchphrasing at the end. Obviously, this was one of the more important bits on the show. Tom, how did this come off to you? And did you see this in the arena?
No, they have been keeping a lot of stuff from us in the arena pretty much with let's see. I think the only thing we saw on the screen at this taping was the backstage brawl. And they had not announced that there was supposed to be a tag team match that broke down backstage. It just started and spilled into the arena. So actually coming out of the taping, I only knew for sure what the War Games match was going to be. And I could only make educated guesses about the rest of the War Games card. And I like that they have been keeping us in the dark about that kind of stuff. So
yeah, I love that too. Spoilers are going to be lesser.
Right. So we knew who the Black Attacker was going to be. But the last time we saw Johnny was when he was rolling his hoodie up over his head, which, of course, on a show that you and Justin did, I wrote in how glad I was that they cut that out because it was just awful. And
it cried.
It would have been worthy of that because after he drops the microphone or after he says, I'm right here and drops the microphone, he then turns his back to the hard cam. Sulks, like lowers his head to the ring and slowly rolls his black hoodie up over his head and then saunters away looking at the ground. And it was the opposite, or not the opposite, but it was that bad path of turning heel that we would not have wanted to see. And it's not what we got with this video package tonight. Although I agree that it did go a little bit far toward the end, I also agree that this is the type of villain that I like in my movies and my TV shows and my literature and whatnot. And in real life, with the exception of some certain psychopaths, there are people that we regard as villains, but they themselves do not feel they are doing evil. I hate even discussing these movies, but for all the horrible things about the Transformers movies, my least favorite thing about them is that in whichever one it was, Megatron lays out why he does what he does. What is his motivation as a character? And he says it is to spread evil throughout the galaxy. And I'm like, that's not a thing, though. That doesn't make sense. If you are doing whatever you're doing it because you think it's the right thing, not because you think it's evil. So Johnny did a very good job with this, or this promo was laid out, this character development is laid out in a excellent way. And furthermore, I love that it's not some additional ridiculous development. There's not some other I did it for The Rock kind of crazy thing that's now being added to the storyline. It's the simple, you know, you were in my way. I needed to get to Ciampa and you were in my way, which is exactly that is the obvious reason. And the fact that they were building this up is this is the week Johnny's going to tell us why. I was worried that they were going to do some other crazy thing like, you know what, Alistair, before either of us got to NXT, you stole my girlfriend or whatever kind of weird thing they were going to do. So I'm really glad that it didn't go that way. So, yeah, this is compelling. And I read through the emails before we started. This email is the one that references The Dark Knight, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I picked up on that too. And Johnny is very into the superheroes and dresses up like them at the takeovers and whatnot. So I'm not surprised that he worked that in a bit, but, my own personal opinions about the Dark Knight franchise aside, I really like the third one, for whatever that's worth. The one that nobody else seems to like.
It's the only one I haven't seen.
Okay. I will say that for all of its issues that it had, the Bray Wyatt and John Cena feud on the main roster that lasted about 3 months and had a WrestleMania match seemed like they were doing a Batman and Joker thing with Cena and Wyatt respectively. And I actually felt that aspect of the feud translated really well to the ring. So I'm actually all for more Dark Knight references in my wrestling because it worked out well last time.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. This is so stupid. Another comic book thing, since that's all we're talking about tonight. When you were talking about Megatron with his issues about or with his thing about spreading evil, I thought of how, I don't know if this is still a faction in comics, but at one point there was a group called the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. And I remember I remember reading that even at 12 thinking, well, that's freaking stupid. Like, they wouldn't call them this. Like, they've got to, if they don't believe they're right, then, like, why should I even buy into this? And it's normally better than that. But Marvel is like, what, whatever, let's just, the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. It's just, and, like, in addition to being stupid that they call themselves that, it's also stupid sounding. So, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell it was good for.
It's not even a good acronym.
Yeah, no. Like, you expect that to be the kind of acronym where they're like, superhero in training, why is he called? Oh, I get it. So yeah, you want it to be more clever than it is, but yeah, Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, gang. Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. Regal then announced the War Games advantage, and like Tom said, didn't announce the match itself. It's not going to matter. The winner is going to be the heel. That's just how these things work. There's no reason in the world that the faces would have the advantage in this match, because then the heat doesn't work. So even though that's given away, there are many, many ways where this can be a good match. So I'm excited to see it regardless. This kind of, for me, harkened back, and this is going to be the dumbest reference in the world, but this made me think of something that I really liked from Royal Rumble 1990. I'm going to say maybe five. But what they did was they said, okay, everybody goes and picks their numbers out of the tumbler. There are two blank numbers in the tumbler, and if you're in those, then those two guys wrestle, and the winner gets number 30 and the loser gets number 1. So to just give a match that extra hook, I just love that, even if you know what's going to happen, because that match was Triple H versus Duke the Dumpster Drossy. You knew they weren't going to have Duke be number 1. Triple H seemed primed to have, like, that really long spot in the ring, and he ended up losing by disqualification or whatever it was, and he lasts 54 minutes in the ring, and so maybe kind of a giveaway what they were going to do, but yeah, that just, it just made me think of that and how I'd love a lot more of these they used to do this more, where when a pay-per-view was coming up or a big show was coming up, where they would have a match pitting people from that group against each other, but it would be for some kind of advantage. It would be right for something. And, like, I don't know if you can think of any others, though, but is this stupid that I love that so much? Like, I think back to that match way more than a person should.
There was one, I want to say it was before WrestleMania, actually, where on the SmackDown go-home show, Kurt Angle wrestled in the main event for an opportunity to be added to The Rock versus Stone Cold, and it was sort of like, okay, I know that at the last minute they're not going to add Angle to this super hot Stone Cold Rock feud, but yep, I'm really into it right now because it was, I don't know, 2000, 2001, whatever it was, and the height of my fandom and whatnot. So Yeah, no, I've gone back and watched some stuff on the network, and I guess maybe I was used to it at the time, but I've noticed how go-home shows now are just sort of like you cart the wrestlers out there and you remind them what they're doing on Sunday. But back then, there were definitely implications. You still had to tune in to see what was going to change.
Yeah, you did. And now it's just four or five matches with foregone conclusions. They bring out some of the people that aren't going to be booked for that so they can do their jobs. And that's about it. But yeah, it's a little more of that. More on the line. It's a good thing. So anyway, we had a main event. Velveteen Dream versus Lars Sullivan. It seemed like the only way they could go. It's odd. So this payoff, very strange with Tommaso coming to the ring and putting himself in a position where it seems like his character would know what the potential fallout from this is. It seems like his character should know that if Lars Sullivan beats Dream, even though he's only going out there to mess with Dream, that could adversely affect him. Like this character watches wrestling. He knows wrestling. He should. And maybe that's not even the direction they're going. But if that's not what they're doing with Lars, then I don't have another reason in the world for him to be in this match. He's obviously poised for something here. But other than that, I think this kind of worked on the whole brute versus, especially considering it seems there it's either a soft turn or a turn for the. He might just be turning for the purposes of this match. Dream is. I don't know where that's going to land. I know that I'll be on board regardless. I think his act works better as a heel, but whatever they're going to do, we'll see. We'll see what he can do in this sink or swim situation.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
But on this main event, what did you think?
Yeah, totally agreed regarding the Dream. I will say with the preface that I personally have not cared for anything Elias has done on the main roster. He has recently turned face and he has not dropped any of the characteristics from when he was a heel that made him popular. And I am pleasantly surprised by that. So even though it's not personally working for me, I like seeing that WWE is taking a character and going, you know what? This isn't what we would see in a babyface per se, but people like it. So let's just present him as a babyface. And that if they are going that direction with Dream, I do feel that they should do the same thing and let him still be the same character, but position him against heels. And of course, as I'm sure many, many other people wish, that would be something that they would do more often rather than doing more strict casting of characteristics. But anyway, regarding
and they have Rock as precedent, like,
yeah, yes,
this you literally one of the biggest stars you've ever had was successful because you turned him and you leaned into his character. You still had him. He was every bit the jerk to his opponents as before, just on the other side of the aisle.
I think about that all the time, and there was a little moment on Raw last week where Elias went backstage and he was just walking backstage. Dana Brooke walks up to ask him, hey, sing a song for me. And he just tells her no. He said it in sort of a funny way, but kept walking, really shut her down. And there's the issue of the fact that Dana Brooke is a face character right now, but there was a little moment where I was like, that's totally something that The Rock would have done. So that absolutely came to mind. The Lars thing is convoluted because I do feel like they could. Oh, boy, where do I want to start with this? It reeks to me of just needing something for Lars to do. And for me, I would have been satisfied with him just continuing to work squashes for now. My tip off here, and I legitimately do not know whether he gets added to this match or not. That was not revealed at the tapings one way or the other. The only tip off for me is the way the commentators spoke about this and the way they spoke about why Ciampa would have interfered. And it seems as though Regal has already made his decision about what match is going to take place at War Games. And Lars probably got this match just because he was really upset with Dream for getting the match that he wanted. So regardless of the outcome, the match is still Ciampa versus Dream, and it's too late to change it. Again, that's convoluted because Lars just went over, and so you'd think that he would have the argument to get added to the match. But the commentators were just saying, like, oh, Ciampa knew what he was doing. He made sure that Lars got to beat up Dream to soften up Dream for the match in a week and a half. So that's what I think. I think it's still going to be a singles match, Ciampa-Dream. But I feel like you could have done this all without Lars.
Yeah. It was odd. Ciampa would look brilliant if Lars doesn't get added to the match, but an idiot for doing the exact same thing if he does get added to the match.
Yeah.
It's only it's results based thinking, but historically what would happen here is we would have a change, and the fact that we're so close is the only thing that made me think, yeah, maybe he's not getting added. Lars is an interesting case because he's not like that good. He's okay. He's in the ring. I don't know. I don't look forward to him, but he's kind of there. I feel much like the emailer before who mentioned Lars just being kind of scrawled on the back of his shorts. I think it's just so comical.
I like to imagine that he did that himself just so he doesn't lose track of him.
Right. But the thing about a character like Lars is that a dominator who doesn't dominate is not of much use to you. Like, these guys who are really big and they're kind of limited match-wise, they're not going to have a lot of great matches. If you don't get main events out of them early, you probably never will. And that's kind of... I hadn't thought this before too much, but tonight watching, I felt very much that Lars is kind of a Braun Strowman for NXT, where it seems so obvious that you got to try it early on, because if you don't, I mean, Braun is so damaged right now. He's taken like this last defeat, I don't even think was that big of a deal in comparison to the fact that there was turn, and he's already being used as that guy that you turn to create a threat for somebody. He's not being turned to benefit himself. He's being turned to benefit his opponents, which is basically like the Big Show way, the Kane way. You get turned based on what other wrestlers need, not because you can benefit from it. And it seems like Braun's already in that position, which is surprising given how much they sometimes feel the need to give him, like how much they push him. But I don't know. I feel like I sometimes think that ship has sailed. He'll win a title at some point, I think. But yeah.
My position on Braun, and because this is relating back to Sullivan, I'm sort of saying this about Sullivan too, and you can tell me what you think. My position on Braun has been that he's the current Andre, and you don't want to sacrifice his attraction as its own separate thing by merging it with the attraction of the title when you could keep them separate and have two attractions on your show. Right. But maybe that's an outdated way of thinking. I don't know, because I know that you agree with the idea that this is a completely different thing, but that Brock Lesnar being quote unquote part time is not an issue because he's a legitimate draw, and when he shows up, it is special, and they can still get a lot of mileage out of having him lose eventually. But you and I seem to agree that that's an okay thing right now, even though that's an outdated point of view, and that's how Hogan was treated. But the vast majority of the fan base seems to be outraged by it. So maybe I'm just thinking too old school here.
The people who talk a lot online are outraged. I know everybody's online, but like the ones who are talking loudest are the ones who are outraged. I would love to agree and say people are outraged, but the numbers don't show that. The numbers prove that this is good for business. Like the funniest tweet that I saw, and it wasn't from a listener, wasn't from anybody tangentially related to the Torch. They just said, it seems like they just don't know what's best for business. But if you look at it, like this literally was a business decision. He's one of the only people who moved the needle, on Raw and on their major shows. So it, as much as that frustrates people, their feelings are in some way, you know, what's getting him pushed and everything.
This is completely tangential, but in the circumstance, having the title back on him right now is a bit of a mulligan to try to reclaim something that was so sadly lost with everything that he had been doing with Roman for those years. So we'll see if it transfers to Seth or Drew or whatever happens. But yeah, sorry, we went off on that whole thing. The Braun and Sullivan combining their attractions with the title.
Right. Yeah. And what I was kind of thinking there is it's antiquated, not because it's a bad idea. It's antiquated because there's too much TV time to fill.
Good point.
Andre could be that attraction because there was a lot of banter on primetime wrestling and things like that. And then there would be, he didn't even have squash matches very often. He was pay to play. Now these guys are expected to do matches with, and you know, four or five of the eight matches on primetime would be enhancement matches. Guys, like literally no chance for the other guys. And then one or two of the star matches would be like Coco Beware versus the Warlord. And you knew who was going to win that match. Even though they were both named guys. I think the problem there is not, there are only so many attractions you can create, and you've got to create them in a different way, because that monster attraction seems like something that's not, monsters are, they've been too exposed and there's too much time to fill. If he wasn't there very often, then he could be exactly the same as Lesnar, but he's not. The closest thing I can think of as a true second attraction that was almost bigger than the others would be the Streak. That would be the only other thing that I can think of. Undertaker and his unbeatable streak at WrestleMania, which happened just kind of by accident at first, had to happen that way first, and then did this. And it's always funny to me when people say, do you think they should start the streak, blah, blah, blah? And I go, they're not thinking about that. They're just thinking about booking right now. So there will be a ton of guys who cannot get the streak because they're literally just in the wrong place to win that match the first time they go to WrestleMania. They're not thinking about starting a streak. They're just thinking about booking a show. That started organically. And then, you know, they were in a corner because he knew he was going to win all the matches. But whatever. There's always somebody you can sacrifice to him and have a good match. We are all over the map with this right now. But you know, this is wrestling theory stuff. This is fun to cover. I don't remember where this started. I believe it started with attractions and secondary things and stuff. Lars needs something to do. And I get that that's going to happen sometimes, but if you book someone in a way that makes it seem like they just need something to do, people will see it. They will. And so, I agree that I would have liked to see the squashes continue and save whatever's going on here, because it really seemed to muddy the waters here, no matter what the result is. In fact, if he's not inserted, I'm going to question the brains in having Velveteen lose this match right before TakeOver. So
yeah, I guess, I mean, we could see some kind of run in at the pay-per-view, I suppose. But yeah, I would agree that if you don't have, if it reeks of somebody needing something to do, then you probably just shouldn't give them that thing to do, because it is very easily detectable. And we saw that recently with Nikki Cross, where we were all questioning where the heck is Nikki Cross, and now she's been all over the show, and it's clear that at the time they just didn't have anything for her to do, and that's fine, because she would have gotten really stale if they had just carted her out there every once in a while to remind us that she existed.
Yep. All right, we have two more emails. This one's from Chris Fielder. Hey, guys, surprisingly, tonight was a pretty good show from top to bottom. I have to be honest, when I saw the opening match was going to be Forgotten Sons versus Heavy Machinery, I almost wish I had a fast-forward button. The first part of the match was exactly what I was expecting, but about halfway through the match started to pick up, and by the end of the match, dare I say, I was fully invested. This has to be the best match I've seen of either team to date. I know that isn't saying much, but hey, you got to start somewhere. Also, the women's match was kind of the same. The first part of this looked way too choreographed to me, but again, by the middle of the match, business picked up. The kicks from Conti and Dakota looked stiff as hell to me. What do you guys think the ceiling is with Conti? She seems to be progressing pretty well to me. Also, what did you guys think of Nikki Cross's SmackDown debut last night? I just wonder if this was a one-shot deal or if she's up for good. What do you think? As always, love the show. Chris Fielder, bro. Truth Are Consequences, New Mexico. Covered a lot of that, but Conti's ceiling, I don't know. My answer is definitely different than it used to be. My answer used to be TV losses on NXT. Now I think that maybe more can happen with her. I don't know that she's ever going to be a major player. A worker her size working in a heel role is definitely working for Alexa, but Tenara needs to be a lot more organic and a lot more realistic for that to work. And she's trending in the right direction, but I would not call her. She won't be an NXT champion, I don't think, ever. I could potentially see her maybe passing through that on the main roster, but I guess I can't see that either. But I can see her being a valuable heel pest, maybe like an Iconics type. I don't know. Anything? What do you think there?
Yeah, I guess I said that I liked that match that she and Dakota had without really going too much into why. And part of it is Tainara's character work that I mentioned. And the other part is what Fielder mentioned, those kicks. Every single kick in this match was fantastic, and surprise, surprise for a Dakota match. But Tainara threw a few herself. For her ceiling, I also don't see her being too prolific, but I could right now, and this could change if she continues to improve, I could see her being like a Liv Morgan, Sarah Logan type in you know, not the primary person in a stable. And taking the Riot Squad as a template, that might not be too bad of a thing, because, I mean, granted, this is real specific just based on how much I've been enjoying Ruby Riot on Raw lately. But the Riot Squad has legitimately been one of the best things on Raw for my money for the past few months. So, you know, if she becomes sort of like a Logan or a Morgan, then she's not going to do too bad for herself.
All right. And I have one more email from Patrick Allog. Hey, guys, I don't watch NXT live at 8 p.m. as I'm watching Survivor at that time, so hard for me to email on something relevant like I used to. However, you guys asked for feedback on Kat on the show, and I like the perspective she gave and hope she comes on again. Patrick Allog, Green Bay. Yeah, Patrick, I didn't get to hear the whole show because I saved it for this morning so I could be fresh on that show in case there was anything I wanted to comment on for tonight from this morning. And I got dropped off like 2 hours early at work because it worked logistically to listen to it. But when I got there, they said, oh, we had a call out, can you just clock on? So I didn't get to listen to it. I heard like the first 15 minutes before they realized I was there. So I basically heard hellos, but I do want to thank Kat for doing the show. And hopefully I'll be able to wedge that show in this week with my – and I've always got way too many things I'm trying to catch up on. But yes, we thank you, Kat, for filling in, giving us the three-person booth last week. And if people seem to like it, then at some point, when we've got room, we'll figure it out. We'll get another perspective on the show. So I am Kelly Wells at Spooky Milk. You can find me, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. That's where you can email us. I know I mentioned that earlier, but I wanted to mention it again because we like the emails, folks. Tom, who are you?
I am at Tom Staup on Twitter, and I will recommend listening to more of Kat Moore on Harley and Kat and Bridget's Mae Young Classic podcast for VIP members. Even if you've already seen the tournament, it's a really good guide to go through, and they did a very excellent job with it. And I am looking forward to doing more of these and hopefully getting to talk about Matt Riddle some more.
Yeah, absolutely. On the subject of the podcast, I'm going to throw one more little thing at you before I leave. So there's a guy who listened to me on my old podcast, a guy named Kurt Rowan, also listens to this podcast and listens to many other podcasts, pop culture and wrestling. And I just wanted to pass this on literally because it blew my mind. But he took down the stats of podcasts from whatever format he uses. And in the last 365 days, he has put in 87 days of listening to podcasts. 87. I don't know. I didn't know that was possible. I don't know what else he does. I don't know who else is in his life. I don't know where he's driving all the time that he's doing this. But I just wanted to say 87 hours of podcasts. I would love to have that kind of time because the torch is full of them alone. And I would do those. I would do Colt Cabanas. I would do all that. But yeah, 87 days. So Kurt Rowan, we salute you.
Yeah, I listen to my podcasts on 2.25 speed just to squeeze them all in, and I still have to do the pull apart at the end of the week.
I never thought of doing that at faster speed. That makes so much sense. All right, so we will see you next week. I don't know who's going to be here. My daughter's show that I wrote, my daughter and I wrote the fall play for her middle school, and I will be there next week. So I'll probably not be here, but we'll fit it together somehow, folks. And I will see you soon after that. So cheers and see you next week.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free editions of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.